Since 1898, Marquis Who's Who has offered our distinguished listees the opportunity to set themselves apart through our print publications. Now, Marquis Radio offers these illustrious professionals the chance to shine in our one-on-one interviews. My guest today is Barry Virchow, who is a retired OBGYN specializing in reproductive endocrinology and infertility. How are you doing today, Barry?
I'm doing fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for asking. Why don't you start by telling us what you'd like to focus on for this interview segment?
Well, I have no particular focus. I'm happy to answer any questions regarding me or my career that you're interested in.
Okay. Well, let's get started with your education. How did you become an OBGYN?
Well, I went to medical school at Tulane University and did a year of general surgery internship at Charity Hospital in New Orleans, and found that I enjoyed surgery, but principally with younger individuals. And that encouraged me to go into OBGYN, where I pursued a residency at the Johns Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore and did a fellowship in reproductive endocrinology and infertility, since that was the area that I was most interested in within OBGYN, and it was an area that was beginning to evolve in medical practice in the United States.
So between the point where you decided to become an OBGYN and when you started practicing, what was the point that cemented the idea in your head that you had chosen the right field in OBGYN?
I spent 2 years in the military after I finished my residency and fellowship, and then joined the faculty, the founding faculty of the University of South Florida College of Medicine in Tampa, where there was an opportunity to initiate a division of reproductive endocrinology within the OBGYN department. So once I became involved, I enjoyed what I was doing significantly, and it cemented the certainty that I had chosen the right thing. And as I said earlier, the field was beginning to evolve and explode with new opportunities and treatments for infertile couples. And I was able to remain on the cutting edge of a new field in medicine.
So what is the function of a reproductive endocrinologist?
A reproductive endocrinologist deals with disorders of the female reproductive tract, since those are directed by hormones principally, and endocrinologists deal with hormonal dysfunction. My area of special expertise was in those hormones that influenced the reproductive tract of women and its normal function and its relationship to having children.
And how long have you been practicing in that area?
Well, I retired a year and a half ago, but I practiced for 40 years. I practiced in an academic setting at the University of South Florida and then initiated a private practice in Tampa, which enlarged to a group of six physicians known as the Reproductive Medicine Group, and then retired from active practice there and went back on the faculty at the University of South Florida, initiating a section dealing with the menopause, since that was an area that was becoming important as the baby boomers began to age.
So from the time that you started practicing up until your retirement, what changes did you notice in the way that the healthcare industry in general, but specifically your practice, evolved with the times?
Well, the healthcare industry during the time that I practiced, fortunately, was at, I believe, its peak. There have been difficulties that are since then that are ongoing. But during the time that I was practicing, the healthcare industry functioned well. And the only problem that I faced in dealing with my patients is that the issue of infertility was usually not covered by insurance. So we had to do things effectively and efficiently in a manner that held down costs as much as possible, but the advances were so rapid and so significant that the costs of dealing with infertility as a patient, unfortunately, are significant.
Were there ever times when you had to, let's say, bend the rules in order to get patients the coverage they needed?
Well, I always did what I could fairly and legally do to help them get coverage for their problems. I never did anything dishonest, but we certainly tried within the framework of what was possible to do so. And interestingly, after 40 years now, the American Medical Association just went on record pronouncing infertility as a disease. And the insurance companies always said it wasn't a disease, despite the fact that the definition of disease in the dictionary is when an organ system does not function appropriately, which is true in infertility.
So do you think that means that in the future, insurance companies may decide to step up their coverage?
I think it will. And another reason from a societal point of view, why that's important, is that as time has gone on and more women enter the workforce and delay having children, the size of the average American family over the past 40 years has reduced from 4 children to just under 2 children, 1.83 per couple.
Are there any misconceptions that people have about the work that you do?
I don't think so. Over the years, particularly as in vitro fertilization has become the focus of much of infertility treatment, it's gotten a lot of play by the press and other issues that have made, I think, the problem of infertility well known and well understood currently. I don't think that was the case particularly back in the 1960s when I started.
Have you noticed that there are certain common risk factors for infertility in women?
Well, certainly stress is common among women today, and that interferes with ovulatory function, which can contribute to infertility. And sexually transmitted diseases are more common today, which affects normal function of the fallopian tubes. Other than those, there are none that pop out at me as more common than a variety of other causes that can contribute to infertility. Infertility in men is also relatively common and accounts in total or in part for about 40% of the instances in which couples have difficulty in having a baby. And those issues are able to be dealt with sperm deficiency by techniques within in vitro fertilization today, so that's more easily solvable than it was in the past.
And as an OBGYN, do you have any experience working with male infertility as well, or is it primarily women?
Well, initially, reproductive endocrinologists dealt with both the man and the woman. As time has gone on, a subsegment of urologists known as andrologists have evolved who are particularly interested in male infertility. So in today's world, the reproductive endocrinologist generally works with an andrologist, if one is available, when there's a male factor that needs to be considered. The male factor is usually identified in the evaluation of the couple, because they're always seen as a couple, by the reproductive endocrinologist. And if a referral is necessary to an andrologist, that is commonly made in today's medicine.
And what would you say is the most rewarding aspect of what you do?
Well, the most rewarding aspect is seeing the pleasure and excitement and fulfillment in those couples in whom a pregnancy occurs and a normal baby is presented into their household.
So on what topics within the area of OBGYN, reproductive endocrinology, and infertility would you consider yourself to be an expert?
I didn't have a special area in which I had expertise over in any way other than over the broad aspects of many things that contributed to infertility. I think probably my expertise was that I had a good grasp of all of the facets of infertility in terms of recognizing and dealing with them.
And as a doctor, what do you think are your strengths? What are the key aspects of the profession that you bring to your patients?
Well, like most good doctors, the most important thing is to be conscientious, to be thorough, to be honest, and to be compassionate. And I think I try to incorporate all of those into my efforts over the years that I practiced medicine.
And throughout your career, what would you say has been the most important lesson that you've learned?
I think the most important lesson that I've learned is that we don't know everything. There's always more to be learned. And sometimes when we learn more, we find out that what we used to think was correct turns out not to be true. So having an open mind, pursuing the truth and unanswered questions, I think is important.
And now that you have retired, do you look back and find that there are aspects of being an active practitioner that you miss?
Yes, I particularly miss the patient interaction, the challenges that are associated with dealing with patient problems, and the opportunity to work with a group of people in solving them. I respect the medical profession and the people who are a part of it, and I miss not being actively involved at this point.
And when you look back at the progression of where you started and where you ended up, do you feel that if given the chance to go back and do anything over, that you would have made any different choices to maybe make things easier?
No, I don't think so. My interest evolved over time. I initially went to college to be a dentist and then decided to go into medicine and was exposed to a course in political science while Kennedy and Nixon were running for president and became interested in constitutional law and thought about doing that for a while, but had been accepted to medical school, so I went ahead and entered it. And things just took off from there. I realized that it was the right place for me.
Thank you, Dr. Virchow, for taking the time out of your day to share your story with our listeners. I want to thank everyone for tuning in to Marquee Radio. Stay tuned for more in-depth and informative interviews with professionals from all walks of life.